From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. A bug in your food is not usually considered a good thing, but what if they are there on purpose? The United Nations says about 2 billion people on Earth include insects in their daily diet, something adventurous entrepreneurs are hoping will catch on in North America.
Our secret recipe has been approved by the world's toughest critics.
Bugs are super good. Bug chips are extra good. It's made up that one.
University of Georgia entomology professor Marianne Shockley wants to find ways to make insects a sustainable food source for humans and feed for farmers all over the world. I visited her in Athens and asked about her first bug encounter.
Very young age at probably a church camp, and you're dared by your, you know, peers to eat an earthworm or something. And I didn't flinch. I thought it tasted like dirt because that's where it came from. So I think I've always been more adventurous with you know, eating and just trying new things. And so I guess from a very early age, I've always been curious.
The Eating Insects Conference that you had in Athens, I was reading about it, and it said that there are researchers from all over the world and coming and bringing their experience. Like, what is the current research on eating insects?
Okay. Well, I can certainly share a program with you, and I think it's very telling. Just at this conference, there were philosophers. There were people from food chemistry and nutrition. There were people from animal and dairy science departments, poultry science departments, entomology, business school, marketing, psychology, anthropology. Really, there's so much space in this field, and it's kind of two-tiered. We have insects for food, so consumption for you and I as humans, but we also have insects for feed, and so there is a lot of people really interested in using insects for waste management or for organic waste streams, food streams, and things like that. So lots of different minds together really kind of looking at these big questions.
Philosophers?
Ethics of eating insects. And it's something that, you know, we have to be aware of. It needs to be on our radar. Insects are invertebrates, and so we're not really on PETA's radar or anything like that. When we do research with insects, we don't necessarily have to have, you know, animal subjects review boards or whatnot like our vertebrate colleagues do if they're working with mice or rabbits or something. So we're in a little bit of a different sphere as researchers, but we do still need to be aware of it, and if we're trying to direct our narrative, let's just say towards vegans, who are vegans for a very specific reason of, let's just say, animal cruelty. There are many reasons that people are vegans, of course. Then we need to have a good answer to that question. You know, are insects raised ethically? Are they harvested ethically? Are they processed ethically? Do they feel pain? We don't know a lot of those answers to those questions, especially when you start dealing, you know, with the humanity side of insects and how they think and feel. So once again, just need to be aware and keep our minds open.
Why do you think the movement for eating insects has grown in recent years? Is it indeed a lack of supply for food supply, cost of food supply? Mm-hmm. Why has it become a thing?
I'd say it's two-tiered. So in 2013, the United Nations and the Food Aid Organization released this huge report about alternative protein sources. And the preemptus behind that particular season, was many of our RUTFs, or ready-for-use therapeutic foods that we use in food aid programs, they're basically protein bars that a lot of times, or some sort of a porridge or something, and the proteins are plant proteins, most specifically peanut proteins. And if something happens to that crop, let's just say Georgia is, you know, a very high producer of peanuts, if we have a bad summer and we don't have the crop that needs to go into all of these different food aid programs around the world, then there's a bottleneck, and now we're having starvation issues, and there's so many options. Why are we limiting ourselves to creating something that could collapse on us? And so really it's the expansion of what's in our toolbox. We're not wanting converts. We really just want, you know, like you have Meatless Monday, maybe we can have like Buggy Thursday.
But I think for a lot of people, there are probably some psychological or social or cultural hurdles to get over. So how do you walk people through that process?
A lot of it is education, and people are very, food is emotional. And food is very, you know, familial and cultural. So you have to kind of keep all of that kind of at the front of your thoughts when you're talking to people. Or I don't try to convince people to eat insects. I don't feel that that's my role. I'm here to educate about insects as beautiful creatures, and let people know that they are edible if and when they choose to try.
What are some of the insects that we get here in Georgia or in the Southeast that would be good for eating?
So we have several large cricket farms here in Georgia that are supporting this industry, which is very, very exciting. There's been a shift, or not a shift, but I guess an addition with a lot of farms that are rearing for the animal industry, for their pets and their reptiles and things, that have put in a food grade line. So crickets are readily available and a Georgia product. We want to, you know, Georgia grown is important, as are mealworms. There are several local mealworm farms. And so those would probably be the two most commonly consumed.
What are the tastiest bugs?
It's really, I tried so many new bugs this week for the first time. Although I've eaten bugs a lot over many years, probably five total have been in my repertoire. So this week, what my new favorite bug is, are ants. And they have such a citrusy, lemony, limey flavor. Just eat them straight, just a pop of just yummy goodness.
So eat them straight? You just take an ant and...
Eat them straight. So the way Chef Joseph Yoon from Brooklyn Bugs prepared it this week was as a garnish. So instead of adding that squeeze of lemon or lime to the dishes he was preparing, he topped them with the ants.
Whole ants, or would he grind
Whole
them
ants.
Up? So it's not just the idea of eating ants, but you actually see them floating on top of your... I don't know.
And that's kind of an interesting line that we're walking here in the U.S. There are some people who are very much so into their food systems and want ownership and want to know the food chain and be involved with it, that probably would be very comfortable eating a whole insect, knowing it's a whole insect. Others understand the importance, don't really want to see the whole insect. But if you kind of look at society as a whole, especially, you know, westernized society, a lot of people don't want to eat a whole fish either, with eyeballs and mouth and whatnot, tails and fins on. They want the fillet.
Well, in addition to your work on edible insects, you've done a lot of work, especially bringing students to places across the world. You yourself have been to China, you've been to the Galapagos, Ecuador, Costa Rica, studying insects. Tell me a little bit about studying insects in the rainforest. What's that process like?
It's very exciting. We usually, you know, start pretty early. The thing about insects, they're around all the time and all the times of the day, but you find different insects based on the time that you're out. So I love being in nature. I love hiking. And it really is just, you know, 10 to 20 days of hike after hike, observation after observation, talking about the different insects, really looking at how they're fitting into their natural environment, doing photography, maybe doing some art sketches, maybe doing some research projects, asking specific questions in that space. It's just exciting. And once it gets dark, it's a whole different ball game. The big bugs come out at night. So it's really exciting. And the students, you know, feel the enthusiasm that I naturally have. And it's really rewarding to see them at the end of the trip just love insects as much as I do.
You started this study abroad program. I'm wondering, in the years that you've been doing it, have you ever watched a student sort of cross over from, you know, a little freaked out or a little skittish about bugs to really embracing the insect study?
Oh, absolutely. I'd say every year I have at least one or two that are there because they're interested but have really don't have a personal connection. And so they're a little more hesitant, kind of standing towards the back. We have these wonderful night collecting sheets where you'll have millions of bugs swarming around you. They may have, you know, a whole face net on or something. And, you know, after two or three nights of that, or certainly after a couple of weeks of being there, those fears are just to the side.
What is the greatest discovery you've ever made, either in breed or, you know, the most dangerous insect?
I would probably say the favorite insect that I ever personally collected was a peanut-headed bug, and it was from Costa Rica, and it literally looks exactly as what you would imagine. And it's one of those, they're very elusive. You stay up late, you put up traps, you search year after year. And finally, one year, I found one on my boot at the dining hall over lunch. So it was one of those bittersweet, I had to do nothing, it came to me, and I finally got to observe one.
Okay, Dr. Marianne Shockley, what have you got for us today?
All right, I have an assortment of delicious and nutritious edible insects, ranging from whole grasshoppers, these are chapulines from Oaxaca, Mexico. They're made with a wonderful chili and garlic and lime, which gives them just a fantastic flavor. Another different type of whole insect, these are whole crickets from Intima Farms in Canada. So if you're wanting to do something with the whole roasted cricket, this would be your base. So a lot of what happens is once you have the ground into a powder, you can start incorporating it into a lot of these different ideas. So we've got several different types of protein bars that simply have ground powdered crickets incorporated.
So it's used like a flour kind of thing?
Not necessarily a flour, because that has an underlying assumption there's a leavening agent. Mm-hmm. So it's just protein powder. I usually add about a tablespoon to whatever I'm creating. So if it's muffins, brownies, my pizza dough, my biscuits, my marinara, whatever. That's enough that it doesn't change the chemistry or the consistency or the texture of what I'm already preparing.
And chips.
Just your tortilla chips. Everyone loves tortilla chips. But once again, you can have just your plain corn tortilla chips, or feel good about having some extra protein.
You said you incorporate this into your cooking. Do you
eat? I do. So my kids probably eat way too many bugs. My college kids, as well as my personal family. But it's just kind of fun, and they're always around.
Cricket protein bars. There's a banana flavor and an apple cinnamon. I think I'm going to go for the chapul, which seems, it's peanut butter and chocolate. And the first couple ingredients are organic coconut nectar, peanut butter, date. Blah, blah, blah. Crickets are way down there. I'm going to eat this now. It looks like your average protein bar. Dense. I don't taste a lot of peanut butter, but I did it.
Do you taste crickets at all?
I don't know what crickets are.
Well, that's a good thing.
That is UGA entomology professor Marianne Shockley. She was a primary organizer of the Eating Insects Athens 2018 conference. And those critter snacks? Actually, pretty good. We'd like to know, have you ever eaten an insect? Or would you? Call us at 404-500-9457 or leave us a comment on Facebook or on Twitter. And now for a change of scale, if you'll pardon the pun. South Georgia waterways are home to a lot of alligators, but there's plenty we do not know about these big reptiles. GPB reporter Emily Jones reports from the Okefenokee Swamp.
I need to see how many babies there are, so I'm going to just try and count how many there are.
We're both kneeling at the edge of the walkway, counting and snapping pictures when...
There she is. Okay, get on this side. Sorry.
What was that?
That's her.
Mama Gator Sally is lurking under the boardwalk, making sure we humans don't mess with her kids.
Emily worked alongside researchers who are studying alligators' place in the ecosystem and joins us now from Savannah. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Virginia.
Safely away from gators right now?
Yes, there are no alligators in the studio.
Well, so what was going on in your mind with a moment that we just heard when you came into contact with the mama gator, who hissed, by the way?
Yeah, it was a little bit nerve-wracking. The researcher that I was with, Kristen Zemitis, she did say that there was a good chance that gator is named Sally. And that there was a good chance that Sally might be lurking nearby. She might be under the walkway that we were standing on, because her eggs had literally just hatched hours before. So I knew she might be nearby, but I didn't even know that alligators made noise. So that was a little bit, you know, we were kind of leaning over the edge trying to take some pictures and stuff. And it was a moment of fear, I think, when
I can
that
imagine.
Happened, for sure.
What were the researchers actually studying?
So they've put these satellite trackers onto Sally and two other alligators that are in the Okefenokee Swamp. So they're tracking their movements, and you can actually follow them online yourself as well. And they're just trying to learn more about what the alligators are doing, where they're going, and kind of figure out what that might mean. And, you know, just kind of collect some more concrete data on them about how they live their lives and how old they get. And just all sorts of information about alligators that we don't really have a lot of concrete data on yet.
Well, here's Kristen Samitis from UGA describing one gator that she encountered.
Out in the swamp, they refer to him as crazy. He's massive. He's underwater right now. He's a little hard to see, but he's the widest alligator I've ever seen. Probably about 12 and a half feet, if we had to guess.
Crazy the gator. Sounds like a very large specimen. So who is he?
So he is an alligator, actually, that they have captured, and that's in an enclosure in Okefenokee Swamp Park. There's a couple gators you can see who are in enclosures, and then most of them are out in the wild. But they had to sort of lure him into an enclosure and kind of close him off from the rest of the alligators because he was so big and so aggressive that he was actually creating some problems. And they think that some of that might be just because it is a park that's popular with tourists. You know, they're very careful about how they about the alligators, but an alligator can get used to humans when there's humans walking around all the time. So they think that maybe is a factor. And he was just interfering with the other alligators trying to live their lives and do their alligator things. So they felt that it would be safer for everyone if Crazy was closed in a container, or not a container, an enclosed area where he's got kind of a fence around him. He's got water. They feed him plenty. He's very happy. Just hanging out in his own closed off section of the swamp.
DPB reporter Emily Jones, also host of Morning Edition there out of Savannah, with the latest word on alligators. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Sure thing.
Now you can hear more of her reporting on Georgia's gators at gpbnews.org. And you can also see and follow some of the Twitter accounts assigned to these alligators, which give us a pretty good picture of their everyday life. Now just ahead, one Atlanta chef on his love for collard greens. But first, exploring the connection between Southern food and football. This is On Second Thought.